Oh, okay. So, John Lupinacci. John is a teacher and a teacher educator. He is a professor of cultural studies and social thought in education at Washington State University. And so, do your thing. Thank you.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. And before I get going here, I just want to thank everybody and for all the heartfelt work that everyone's doing here in the organizing, Karen, and everyone who she's working with, all of the plenary speakers and workshop facilitators, tour guides, and all of that. It's not just an honor to be here, but it's really special for a number of reasons. And before I go into a little bit of sharing my story and talking to you all as a teacher thinking about education and specifically thinking about how we can rethink schooling in favor of education, an education that goes a little bit past those last minute seconds in the last hour that we've been talking about here. But before I get any further, I want to be sure to acknowledge the indigenous people of this land. In the land, the lands in general, the continent, which diverse nations have survived and endured genocide, and honoring those original inhabitants of the land on which we meet here, let us not forget that our presence here as guests on this land is very much related to a genocidal violence inflicted on this area's native people. And so the stakes are high. And the capacity of the planet for sustaining life depends upon future generations learning or relearning to live in harmony and at peace with the diverse ecosystems in which we all reside. And so that is what I believe to be part of the goal of gross national happiness, is to measure indicators and factors of happiness, turning our attention towards learning, living, and ensuring peace and coexistence within our diverse ecosystems. Not an over-romantic kind of peace, but one where violent conflict and day-to-day exploitation that is too often normalized into status quo no longer dominates the social structures of our community in favor of what we might refer to as ecological. And so instead of going into really teaching about gross national happiness, I think we can look into. And instead of comparing it, which it's kind of born out of this comparison to gross domestic products and these other kinds of measurements, I like to back up a bit and think about the mindset in which obscures one of our very conditions of existence difference. And that it's a system like gross domestic product and these economic measurements and linking that to education that highly focuses on individualizing things and measuring in a term of success that focuses on the success of the individual and not on our shared dependencies. And so two of the nine metrics used by gross national happiness are two that I tend to focus on: education and ecological diversity and resilience, or people's perception on the environment. So while all the domains are interrelated and important, I'd like to hold them all at equal value and focus on those two, and talk a little bit about how teachers, our community members, or all of us really, might rethink schooling, one of the structures in place that I think we learn to think of ourselves as individuals, how we might rethink that and recognize and value ecological diversity. So let me just go right to a little bit about my story and share that. So I'm a scholar, activist, educator, and I'm a professor of cultural studies, but really all I am is a guy from Detroit who was born and raised there and who became a teacher. And I'm also a seedling transplant to the Northwest. I live in Spokane and I come from Detroit, but that connection to Detroit is where I learned from local activist educators and from actually some of the folks here today the possibility of reclaiming happiness and health from a world that should be, by all measures, akin to industrial measurements, like gross national product, et cetera, should be failing, right? And if that's how success is to be defined, then places like Detroit should be understood as dying. However, there's nothing living about that sort of measurement or definition of success. In fact, If we wanted to be explicit about this, then what we are really talking about here can be referred to, drawing from Vandana Shiva, as she describes her vision of Earth democracy, is we can refer to this as learning to favor living economies over killing systems upon which we are too often basing our thinking and decision-making. So schools, in many ways, focus on Western notions of individualism and the setup of value system that is not based in any ecological truths. Right? Schooling and modern conceptions of education focus on the individual as separate from and superior to all other beings. And while difference is important, what is troubling about schools is that they too often teach about difference devoid of its relationship to dependency. And such denial of our dependencies, or learning to deny these dependencies and differences, is extremely dangerous and lead to these metrics like gross domestic product. Language and culture are inseparable. And so when faced with deep need for cultural change, it's productive to examine the metaphors and images that lead to or mislead our thinking and actions. We are bound to the metaphors of our language. And so I offer a story as an example of recognizing our interconnectedness and shared dependencies. Too often I find myself living in accordance to what Australian ecofeminist philosopher Val Plumwood refers to as an illusion of disembeddedness. All right? As though I exist as an individual separate from and superior to everything else. This notion of individualism, where human or even self is seen as an illusion of disembeddedness, separate from the environment. We are part of the environment. It's scary, but it's common that I might go about my day fancying complex uttered meanings, forgetting that beneath all of those metaphors, language ought to remind us of our dependencies. Language, at its very root, reveals our dependency on one another and the ecosystems to which we belong. Gregory Bateson wrote, "Mammals, in general, and we among them, care extremely not about episodes, but about patterns of our relationships." As humans, we're all mammals and akin to other species. We all communicate through that kinship, our shared dependencies. That we interpret experiences by recognizing or being attuned to patterns of our ecological existence. We live because of our dependencies on plant life, soil, bacteria, oceans, streams, and so on. Jordan Keith reminds us of this, if you can see that in Yes Magazine, and there's fabulous videos of it, that we ourselves are bodies of water. Right? She talks about the ocean inside her body. For example, imagine that you go home, you go to the refrigerator door, and you have a cat, a feline companion, that comes up and makes certain sounds. She's not saying, "I'd like some food," though you may know very well that is what she wants. You may be able to guess correctly and give her that, of course, if there's any in the cupboard or in the fridge. But what she's actually saying is something about the relationship between herself and you. If you were to translate her message into words, it would sound something like dependency, dependency, dependency. She, that feline companion meowing at the refrigerator door, my cat meows like a cow, it's really something, is talking, in fact, about a rather abstract pattern with a relationship. From that assertion of a pattern, you are expected to go from the general to the specific, to deduce the cat would like some food. This is crucial. This is what living things are about. They are connected, and as mammals, we are concerned with patterns of relationships, with where we stand in love, hate, respect, dependency, trust, happiness, and similar abstractions. Words are important to us, but sometimes really get in the way. So as part of thinking about education for ecological diversity and resilience, attention to language is taken in effort to emphasize the historical importance of events and experiences that shape how we interpret patterns. Simply put, language shapes how we understand the world. Through everything we speak and do, we communicate more often than we recognize. We, of course, use signs and symbols to communicate these patterns of our relationships, but beneath all these layers of signs and symbols is simply dependency, dependency, dependency. In other words, any conversation or communication, one that goes older than words, reminds us we are not individuals. With every breath we take, we are in relationships of dependency, dependency, dependency. So back really quickly to wrap up with education, gross national happiness, and this whole rethinking schools in the wake of education. It's troubling how in dominant culture we have come to devalue that dependency as a weakness or as something undesirable. We objected this matter of fact and replaced it with an illusion of autonomy. And I suggest, and I'm not alone, as there are many here who live this work daily, that we ought to leave the concept of education as a passport to more money and to a so-called higher status in the future and replace schooling with a concept of education that centers on dependency indifference. A process that enlists the tremendous wisdom and resilience in ecological systems and cultures, living in sync with local capacities to sustain life. Reimagining schools as places where the tremendous energies of children are connected with efforts to rebuild and re-spirit our communities and our cities right now in the present. Just imagine how lively and healthy, not to mention happier, by indexes of gross national happiness, our communities would become almost overnight if, as part of the curriculum in schools, was including children learning to recognize the value of diversity as a condition of difference upon which everything exists. Imagine students taking responsibility as eco-citizens and planting community gardens, not just gardens with human food, but gardens that restore and maintain rich biodiversity. Imagine students reducing waste and repurposing everything as ecological economists, critical of technologies that undermine and threaten their communities' relationships of dependencies. These things are happening in communities all around. You probably, we are the choir, we know of these things happening, right? But in every case, what we need to focus on, at least I think as an educator, is where they're happening in small places. They've been some of the fastest ways to motivating children to think differently about something as crucial as their dependence and not to think towards their education as being their ticket out of a particular area, but the rite of passage into maintaining dependencies. So on that, I will end with just all of these words translated could be understood as dependency, dependency, dependency.
Thank you. Thank you so much, John.